The following talk was given by Steve Hagen at Dharma Field Meditation and Learning Center in Minneapolis on November 17, 2024. This talk may not be played or reproduced for profit.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good to see you. Well, last night here at Dharma Field, we had it was a movie night, and we show a movie here usually once a month on a Saturday night. And last night was a very interesting movie. It was called The Monk with a Gun. The Monk with a Gun.
The Monk and a Gun.
The Monk and a Gun. Okay. The Monk and a Gun. Interesting movie. And it was set in the 2006 in Bhutan, which at that time was, and I remember this, in fact, I think I saw a 60 Minutes episode or whatever about this at the time. Well, it was right before the king of Bhutan. He was going to abdicate, and they were going to become a democracy, and they were also, it was also at a time when they were going to join the internet. It was the last country in the world, I think, that connected to the internet. And they allowed television for the first time. And I remember the point that on that 60 Minutes story about, I believe this is where I saw it, I don't remember, that was a while ago now, but the people were very happy. In fact, they measured their, most of the countries, I guess, in the industrialized world anyway, what do we have, the GDP, is that what it's called? Or the, you know, our gross domestic product, or GNP, gross national product. Well, there in Bhutan, they had, I don't know if it would be the, well, they measured their gross happiness anyway. But their concern was not with wealth or acquisition or that sort of thing, but happiness. And I remember it was said then on that program, that they're kind of, for those who measure such things, and I don't know how you would do this, but they were among the happiest population of people on the earth. But now they were going to go through this huge change, and that was sort of the backdrop, the setting of this movie. It began with, I'm not going to say too much about, just kind of lead in here, but because I don't want to ruin it for you if you want to see it. I recommend it. It was quite interesting. But it was a monk who was heading up to see his lama, his teacher. And then the teacher told him that he needed guns and sent him out to get, but they settled on two guns, like one gun, two, and he went, he had to get two guns, and he needed them before the full moon, which was some days off. I don't know how long now. Anyway, so that's kind of how that starts out. Then they were training. The government had set this up, the king probably, for people to, they were going to have a mock election first, just to kind of train the people how to go about doing this, having an election and all of that. As the movie was going on, they would have these meetings, people gathered together, say they were supposed to vote on one of three, what would they be, parties or something like this, or issues? Well, they were issues, and they gave them the colors, what was it, green, blue, and red, red, yellow, and blue, that's right. Yeah, the primary colors, so. And they each stood for, like, one was for prosperity, was it?
Industrialization
was one, something to do with the environment, I think, was another, and then also just
preservation.
That's what I knew. It started with a P. None of this really matters. But so they were to vote for these different factions or these different issues, and I guess they even assigned, like, you vote red over here, you vote blue, that sort of thing. But as they got together to discuss this before the election, they were also friendly with each other, and finally the one who was training them said, no, you're not in agreement. You have to be fighting over this. You hate each other, actually. And they said, you know, so it's a fight. So they're learning about democracy. So here were they were a happy bunch of people all living together in harmony under a benevolent king. Apparently the king was a pretty good guy, which would be helpful, and a very happy population. But now it's almost like they're being trained to argue and fight. So it develops from there. I'm not going to, but it has a very interesting, the way it ends is quite interesting. And I don't know if this is an actual true story, but it was certainly set in a setting of true events that were taking place in Bhutan at the time, around 2006. But anyway, this whole idea about, and there's the good people maybe and the bad or the bad issues, and so we're talking in these kind of dualistic terms, kind of training and learning how to do this, I guess, or even to think in these terms. So this issue then of good and evil was there perhaps in the background, starting to think of your neighbors as being bad because they are thinking in a different way or whatever. Of course, we could ask that, is this a good thing to do? They were happy. They were peaceful. They got along. And so we can look at, so democracy, is that what it is? It's easy for us to slide into looking at things in terms of good and evil. We easily do this. I don't know, but this was certainly introduced into the world by Zoroaster, maybe around 3,000 years ago, I'm not sure. But it was very much based on the good, Ahura Mazda, and then Agnew, Manu, or something, I forget the names, of, it was good and evil, and good pitted against evil. And when the Hebrew children were captured there in Babylon, they picked this up. They were only there captive for about 40 years or so, the leaders were. And then they were released. And but now Judaism had this kind of thinking in it. And Christianity came out of that. And then Islam. And so that's not that people didn't think in terms of good and bad before that. But it was becoming something that the culture, and various cultures as it moved into different societies and things, we're steeped in looking at the world in this way. But here in Bhutan, it hadn't quite gotten there yet, that kind of looking at things. But also in China, you have a different way of viewing things too. I've given you the story, I've told it many times, of the wise Chinese farmer. It's a Taoist story. And very quickly, for those of you who might not know it, but the farmer just, he has a bit of good fortune. Well, his horse runs away, so it's some bad fortune. And his neighbor comes to commiserate with him, and the farmer says, well, who can say what's good or bad? Next day, the horse comes back with more horses. And says, oh, this is good, Well, who can say what's good or bad, he would say. And then his son broke his leg trying to tame one of the horses there. And that's bad. And then the army comes through the next day looking for young men to go to the war or whatever. But they skipped over his son because he had a broken leg. And there's neighbors always coming saying, oh, this is great, wonderful. And well, who can say, says the farmer. Where do we expect this story to end? This is human life, This turn, seems good, and this seems bad. Or you can also look at it in terms of evil as well. Something that's opposing good. And we can really make that into a thing, evil and good. Well, here then, just recently, of course, we had this big election, and I remember these kinds of observations being made. I was somewhat sympathetic, and basically it boiled down to two sides. And there are other factions, we all know, of course, but all kind of slipping into, basically it's coming down to one of two people here. And I was sympathetic with one view, but and then I was hearing, though, people saying of the other side that they're evil. I thought, well, no, this is going too far. But then pretty soon, I saw or heard people on the news and stuff on that other side saying, the other side is evil. You know, so they're both calling each other evil. And at times, they said all sorts of things. But when you think back to the farmer, the Chinese farmer who would just make that up. Well, who can say what's good or evil? How are we going to make any sense of this? One thing that you yourself might call good or evil today, you might have a different idea about it tomorrow. But a lot of talk going this way. I've even heard this sort of talk among Buddhists. Like we have, when we say recite the precepts beforehand, for a lot of the ceremonies we might do, not that we do a lot of ceremonies, but we have what's called the formless admission. Sometimes it's translated as the formless repentance, is it? Well, that's kind of more of a Christian notion of repentance. Repenting, but to who? Well, mainly there would be to God or something, of your sins when you've acted against God's will or intent or something like this. And that's how you repent. But no, there's you, and you've been bad, and you're asking for forgiveness or whatever. That's a different view than just admitting. Yeah, have you acted out of greed, anger, or self-delusion? And just admitting, yes, this is so. Not characterizing it in any particular way. But this is sort of a notion. But to not do it is kind of more of a, from the Buddhist standpoint, more common. However, there's plenty of people steeped in the Buddhist teachings and that sort of thing, and they'll look at, well, like we open with this formless admission of where it is, how is it, all the karma ever created by me since of old through greed, anger, and self-delusion, I now make full open admission of it. But I've also heard it, you know, at times there's, all the evil, twisted karma ever committed by me, all the bad karma ever committed by me, putting it in terms of good and bad. Like this is about confessing your bad karma, your bad actions, something like this. No, that's our dualistic thinking. That comes from deep conditioning that we've had to think in terms of good and bad, good and evil. And that's really not what this says. And you will not find that in the direct teachings from the Buddha, I don't believe. If you do, I'd like to see it. But things have been added in that way since. But it violates the very core of what it was that the Buddha was offering us, pointing out to us. It's just simply all the karma ever created by me. Not designating good karma, bad karma. Yeah, because if you have bad karma, well, then you can also have good karma. And the Buddha just gets to the very heart of the Buddha's message. What he was saying is he was talking about karma. But he also used, or the way that he thought of karma, he's speaking of willed karma, willed action. Karma just simply means action. The good and bad part is something added on, karma vipaka, karma, you know, whatever, something like this. But it's just karma. And karma just simply means action. But the Buddha gave it this kind of designation of, he's referring to willed action. This is the issue here. Get away from thinking in terms of good and bad, good and evil. This is not helpful for us in any way whatsoever. And it doesn't lead to any kind of clear understanding of what the Buddha's message was, but even of just how to live your life or what is occurring with you or to you and in your surroundings. If you're casting everything in those terms, what we need to be watchful for is not get rid of the idea, because like the Chinese farmers say, well, who can say what's good or bad? So you can change your mind about that, and other people will counter it. But isn't there a way of looking at this where no one can actually counter it? And yes, there is. You know, the basis of morality in most systems that we have is very poor, particularly when it's based on good and bad, good and evil. Not obeying the law, the commandment that's being dictated to you by some authority that, okay, now, and we can argue, but is that a real authority of any kind? Or is that, we can just argue and argue and argue endlessly. Get on two political sides of the issue and fight endlessly, and pretty soon we can call each other evil. This is where we fall into this so easily. But what the Buddha's teaching is, and what our practice is to be aware of what we're doing and what is going on and how easily in our minds we can slip into this kind of duality, this kind of dualism, fighting it out. And then even thinking that the Buddha's way, well, to do the good stuff, this is good. Or we'll talk about enlightenment and delusion, and then, of course, well, enlightenment is good and delusion is bad. Nowhere in the actual teachings is that ever stated. In fact, there's counterstatements to that. I'll be bringing up some of these in the course I'm teaching right now, some lines from the Xin Qing Ming, which are now escaping me. But not hating the world of the senses is identical with true enlightenment. And, this sort of thing. And, you get caught in the world of the senses, and pretty soon now there's good and bad, and I like and I don't like. And here we go again. But our practice is to watch our minds and to see, to notice when we're slipping into Buddhism, plain and simple. One of my books, I talked about a leaning mind, where you can tell when this is occurring. Leaning toward that, you want to bring about this result, you want to avoid that or get rid of that or whatever. This is the heart of what this practice and what this teaching is about. And if we can really see this in our daily actions and how we live, we can learn to just step out of this. And this is kind of what we found there, I think, in Bhutan before the Western influence. And not to say that the Western influence is bad or anything. Who can say? Now they have television. It's not for me or for anyone really to dictate whether or not that's bad or good. I don't know. But we can see what's happening. But for each of us, look into your own heart and mind and realize what's happening with you and how you might be a little careless and how you're using your words or what actions you might take and this sort of thing. And when you realize, I'll say this, that this is the distinction, then it's not good and evil. Is there a distinction there? Yes. And it's very subtle and hard to discern. Sort of. It is. And you can feel it if you can go with this or not. But it's wholeness and what is not wholeness, of wholeness. What is of the faction, of the broken, of the divided? And in terms of the politics, and I do vote, I've always voted my whole life but I learned long ago not to go with the party program on this or that. I look to what seems to be the field here and how does it look? And is there one side or the other here? Because it usually ends up just being two. So it's not so much what's good or bad, but what is of the wholesome? What is of the inclusive? What is seeing things from the standpoint of, say, a larger picture? Or what's more focused on the divided? And then also looking at it in terms of what's in it for me and that sort of thing. That's to be avoided. And usually it appears in very stark relief. It certainly was, I would say, in this past election. But again, I'm not advocating one side or another here, or that one view is better than the other, or something like this. But the view that tends to fade away as a view and becomes just an observation of the whole, this is really quite different. And I remember, maybe I can give an example. of myself, and back in the, I think it was either 84 with Mondale against Reagan, or could have been 80, but I don't think so. But I knew here living in Minnesota, Mondale, he was one of our senators, well, he was the vice president at the time, but I knew he would carry Minnesota. So that, you know, I thought, here's an opportunity where I could vote outside of these seemingly two choices. By the way, that year too, I remember in Time magazine after the election, they showed all 50 states and they were all red, except here's Minnesota, that was blue. And the following week, somebody in Massachusetts said, notes to the editor, whatever, well, there's no choice in the matter. We must move to Minnesota, something like that. But again, you know, and then we can joke about stuff like that. But dividing the facts. But I voted for Barry Commoner in that election, who was speaking a great deal of sense. Because at that time, he was an ecologist, among other things. But one of the things that he had noted, of many things, but it's one that still I remember, he felt that the price of gas, really the real cost to us and to the environment for gasoline at that time, was about $12 a gallon. This back in 84, I guess, I think it was, quite a while ago. But already then, yeah, we should be paying just for the environmental damage it's causing. But he was very sensitive to all of this. So I voted in that direction. But also he was looking out for the whole, for all of us as a whole, and not for the companies that want to make money with this and so they can, you know, sell more and stuff like this. And of course, a lot of that $12 would be in taxes, you know, put on gasoline, that sort of thing. But it's a matter of just, I don't care about that or even the price. I'm looking at who's looking out for the whole. But this is different than looking at things in terms of good or bad. I wouldn't say that Commoner was necessarily, you know, good. Mondale I knew to be a good man, and I've met him a number of times, and being a senator from our state. And he had a great sense of humor. It never showed when he was up giving speeches, because he always kind of got tightened up a bit. Whereas Reagan was always nice and, you know, and grinning. And people might, you know, go one way or another there. But what's the message? Who's looking out for us as a whole, or for our future, the future of the planet and the climate and many other things? So it's a way of looking toward the whole, and being sensitive to that, and not to ignore what people are saying about this side or that, or this issue or that issue. Can't ignore that. But when it starts to, in your own mind, starts being pitted, you know, the good against the bad here, and, you know, these people against those, and that, we're getting lost here now and not seeing the real situation we're in, which is always in totality and in wholeness here. And I think the people in Bhutan, they kind of had that. They had a society that was functioning quite well. they weren't quite so prosperous, but they had happiness, which is not a difficult thing. Anyway, but in looking in these terms, I have this thing here, is what the Buddha said about this sort of thing, coming from the standpoint of wholeness. You can hear it in his words, maybe not quite saying it in the way that I'm pointing to it now, but you'll hear it. It's right in here. He's talking about right speech. And just see how it differs from what we might call not so much not right speech. Well, maybe you could say not right speech, but it's coming from nowhere in particular at all, but taking into account everything. So this is what the Buddha said. They speak the truth, are devoted to the truth, reliable, worthy of confidence. They never knowingly deceive others for the sake of their own advantage. What they have heard here, they do not repeat there so as to cause dissension there. Thus they unite those that are divided, and those that are united they encourage. Concord gladdens them. They delight and rejoice in concord, and it is concord that they spread by their words. They avoid harsh language and speak such words as are gentle, soothing to the ear, loving, going to the heart, courteous and dear, and agreeable to many. They avoid vain talk and speak at the right time, in accordance with facts. Speak what is useful. Speak about right wisdom and right practice. Their speech is like a treasure at the right moment, accompanied by arguments, moderate and full of sense. So that's what the Buddha says, just to give you a sense in what I'm saying. If you're coming from this place of wholeness rather than divisiveness, one side pitted against another. This is why the Chinese farmer could not say what is good. He could see this. How do you say what's good or bad? This thing that seemed bad today, well, it turned out as a result of that, this other thing here that seems pretty good happened the next day, which then led to another thing. So in the end, who could say, and what are you calling good and bad? But what is clear is what is of the whole. And the farmer, in terms of the class I've been teaching, no explanation, and the talk I gave here last time, when there's no explanation, where I'm asking, is anything explained? I talked about these two boxes, and there's this box where everything's taking place, and we always stay there. We're always picking and choosing here, and setting one thing off against what's the better way here, and that sort of thing, grasping for one thing or another. It's difficult for us to see the whole, because the whole never forms as an object. It's the whole. You'd have to get outside of it, but you can't, because it's the whole. And there's nothing outside. There's no outside. There's no boundary here. And actually, this box where everything is going on, this is also within wholeness. The whole thing there is within wholeness. But it's a matter of, in your mind, having your mind to some degree, at least remind yourself of this, before you find yourself being drawn off by one faction or another, or your own personal whims and fancies. If it's probably harmless to others, if I order a pizza as opposed to a spaghetti or whatever, it's not really going to cause some harm here. But we'll carry it way beyond that, to where we're actually mounting armies against each other. Or certainly in our personal lives, being pretty argumentative, but just look for this. My teacher used to just say, whenever we'd get too worked up about one issue or another, he'd just say, pat your head, It's like when I was a little boy, and settle down. But it's kind of like, just pat your head. But find a way to realize, what you're doing now. You might not be able to immediately stop and back out of that, but at least you can become sensitive and start to realize what you're doing and what you're creating out of this. And if you're joining with others, pretty soon it all gets to a fevered pitch and becomes difficult to carry on in this way. And we bring a lot of destruction and pain and misery into the world in so many different ways as a result of that. So I would say that, now, and I know a lot of people today now are, and maybe on both sides are pretty, maybe some people are pretty excited, others are pretty dismayed and upset and frightened and all of that. But we can, at any given moment, wherever we are with any of this, we can step into seeing, or keeping our mind on, setting our mind on the whole, and getting outside of our own narrow issues. So it's a matter of just seeing. It is as Wang Po, I've given this a lot of times too, where Wang Po said that the foolish reject what they see, what is actually being experienced here. What is really taking place? You have ideas about this faction world and you're good and you're bad. Those are ideas. That's thinking. But we can see prior to that, before we get divided and allow ourselves to be drawn off one way or another, we can see. We can see the nature of the whole. It's just this. Settle down right here. Now you can step forward, you can go from here. So it's a matter of just seeing. So he says that the foolish reject what they see, what the immediate experience is, because we already have ideas about it. We're already thinking and putting judgments in there. But the foolish reject what they see, the actual immediate direct experience, which doesn't go to one side or another, if you look very carefully. They reject that, but not what they think, not what they believe. Whereas the wise, they reject what they think. You begin to conceptually get some ideas about Buddhism, think, well, Buddhism is good. Well, this is good. It's better than other religions or something like that. That is not a Buddhist idea, certainly. If you really, or it's not Buddha Dharma, it's not what the awakened have taught and have pointed out. And I won't even say it's the opposite of it, but it's not that. We don't need to do that. But we can live out of this, not doing that. You don't have to carry on in your life, your everyday life, doing, yeah, once in a while you're going to catch yourself. I do too, but, well, okay, I spoke a little too harshly there, or whatever it might be. But I'm trying to keep an eye on this and not to go too far with it. It's not a matter that any of us can walk this path perfectly. I certainly can't. But if we can start to understand what this teaching is really directing us to do, or to notice anyway, at least. So this is to just see, and not to see something particular, but just see overall. And if we're leaning, or we're trying to bring about this or that, avoid that, you know, or people, or whatever it might be, to realize what we're doing there. And that isn't acting out of awakening. That's acting out of confusion, and this is delusion. And awakening is just simply seeing delusion, realizing what delusion is, and so maybe we can learn to avoid, to not keep stepping back into it, at least not so much. Or when we do, as my teacher used to say, the measure of your practice is, yeah, you stumble, how quickly can you get back up again? Get back on your feet. Of course, he's talking about in your mind. You can come back to right here, come back to just simple sanity. Okay, so the wise, they reject what they think. If it's come down to this, I could see this, but I'm, okay, let's go with what we see here. And if we can start to learn to do this to some degree, some very profound understanding will come to you. You can't go looking for it. Because anything you're looking for is something you're forming in your mind, and now, oh, it must be over there. No, it's not like that. So where is it? Well, don't even think in these terms. But no, that's, but this is so vague. Well, not if you finally wake up to it. There's nothing vague about this whatsoever. It's only when we're looking for something, we can't find that, and we can't find, yeah, but notice that you're doing that. You're constantly reaching for something that you've pulled together in your mind as a thing, and whether you labeled it good or bad or neutral, you know. So just simply be aware of it. And it's not a matter of, well, don't do that, don't think. No, we need to think, you know. We have physical bodies, we move through space, we have to eat, we have to do things, interrelate with other people, and all of this. So it's none of that, but don't get carried away in thinking that some ideal or whatever it is that you've latched on to now in your mind, this is the way to go. That is not Buddha Dharma. That is not what the awakened teach. Well, maybe I better end it here. Do we have any questions or comments or anything you'd like to say? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To hear more talks on Buddhism, Zen, and related topics, visit dharmafield.org.